Imagine surrounding yourself with incredible women, women who've overcome challenges, they've rebounded after failures and disappointments, and women who are not afraid to shine their brilliance to make a mark in the world. These women support other like-minded women because they know there is plenty of opportunity for everyone, and that together we really can make a difference, grow our businesses while have fun along the way. This is what Women in Leadership Podcast is all about. Welcome. I'm your host, Anne-Marie Cross. Grab a cover of your favorite beverage, pull up a chair, and let's get this conversation started. And welcome to another episode. So my guest today says, stop judging yourself if you fail to live up to an expectation that society has placed on you. Joining me on today's show is Jenna Banks. Jenna is an empowering voice for women as an author. She's an entrepreneur, a podcast host, as well as a speaker. And her best-selling book, I Love Me More, champions self-love to help women thrive. Now, Jenna's inspiring story of overcoming trauma to become a successful entrepreneur and thought leader has been featured in Forbes, ABC, NBC, and many more. And she's committed to helping women embrace their power through her writing, her speaking, and multimedia platforms. Now, she delivers uplifting messages about building confidence, resilience, and potential through self-care and self-building. We're going to talk more about that today. And her talks provide actionable takeaways for audiences seeking to unlock their full potential. So if you're in a position to be able to grab a pen and paper, I suggest you do so, because I'm sure Jenna is going to share so many great tips with us today, particularly around how can we start to cultivate resilience and self-acceptance. Where do we start? Tips and strategies for leaders to balance both masculine and feminine qualities into their leadership, as well as how do we establish boundaries and prioritize self-care. So very important. Welcome to the show, Jenna.
Thank you so much for that warm welcome, Anne-Marie. I'm excited to be here with you.
Oh, so am I. As I was reading the introduction, I'm sure people would agree that all of the things that you're going to talk about today are so very, very important. And I'm sure you're also going to weave aspects of your own story if people have not yet read one of the reviews about, you know, your story of trauma and how you were able to come back. So let's talk about stop judging yourself, the quote that we started the day's show. Stop judging yourself if you fail to live up to an expectation that society has placed on you. Let's talk a bit more about these expectations, because so often if we are trying to strive towards these expectations, many of them just so out of reach and so out of touch, we're really setting ourselves up for a lot of struggles. What do you say? Let's open with this conversation.
I love it. This is a great conversation. Thank you. Not one that I don't get to have often enough. You know, we, especially as women, have so many expectations on us, but also as men, right? And we have different expectations that for women versus men that are gender related. And so the reason why I wrote my book, I Love Me More, geared towards women, is to address some of those social expectations and social norms that we as women face specifically. You know, there's so many expectations on us, as I'm sure if you watch the Barbie movie, there was the monologue towards the end by America Ferrera, where she talks about juggling everything, right? We have to be superwoman and do it all, the career and the kids and taking care of the family, and that it doesn't let up, and that's an expectation. And it's a ridiculous expectation, and we're burning out. The statistics show that we are burning out, especially in corporate leadership roles. And I know your show is geared more towards entrepreneurs, but in corporate, it's a real problem, especially with this superwoman, supermom, do it all, do it everything kind of mentality that we have.
Yes. Look, let's talk about, and I love that you brought in that this is for men and women, and you're going to talk a little bit more about, you know, some of these things that you are sharing today are for both genders. And so one of the things that I read, and I can't remember who read this, but it's been something that many people who are speaking into this space have said, you know, when we talk about things, particularly around women in leadership and things that women should be doing, one of the, and equality and all of that, what we need to be mindful of is that we don't end up having our conversations that will start to bash men.
That's right.
Because it's not a them and a and right. You know, I and you and we and them and so forth. It's us. Yeah. And, you know, there are men who are very much speaking and support women and women who support men. And I read somewhere too, and I think this is so true, there are skills and gift sets that we as women have that men don't have.
That's right.
And gifts and talents and skills and strengths that men have that women don't necessarily have. And I think sometimes the it's blurred, isn't it? And we're trying to be all things to all people and, as you said, expectations, and we end up getting burned out. What would then be something that you would share with someone who, as you shared that, Jenna, said, you know what, I feel like I am just, you know, on the edge. I do feel that if something doesn't change, it's all going to come crumbling down. What advice and insights would you share for her today, Jenna?
Definitely. And I would imagine if it's a woman, she might be also juggling responsibilities as a mother. And I get this question a lot, like, well, how can I prioritize myself and my needs, which is really part of self-love, right? Is making yourself a high priority, if not your highest priority. How do I do that if I'm a mother on top of, you know, juggling my workload and all the other things? And I say that is the key, is really understanding that we are in a relationship with ourselves, and that relationship needs to be our highest priority, because then you prioritize your well-being. You look out for your needs. You prioritize your happy. You prioritize self-care time. And yes, that is just as relevant, if not more so, when we're parents, caregivers to others, business leaders. It's even more important because we have to take that time for us to what I call charge up our power container, which, you know, imagine if you have like an imaginary power container in, say, your heart or soul area, like a battery, and you're either operating on power full or power less. If we're draining ourselves through the day and we're not charging back up, we are exhausted, and we're exhausting ourselves, causing a lot of stress and raising those cortisol levels. And it causes a hormone imbalance. It does so much destruction to us women, especially. So we need to be balancing out those hormones with happy hormones, charging up our power containers with more oxytocin, so that we can balance out those hormones, you know. And then we get into us as women, you know, facing perimenopause and menopause, which can hit in our 30s. And again, now we're dealing with natural causes of hormone imbalances. We really need to even be more conscientious of making sure we're taking care of ourselves first so we can take care of everyone else.
Good ass. Yeah, so true. Yeah. Someone that I know and very close to recently went to a naturopath, and I love naturopaths because they look at cause and look at all of the different systems of the body and how when one is out, it can impact the others. And the naturopath came back with results and says, I've never seen anybody that has had such high cortisol in your body. And even at rest, your body only goes to a certain level. So she's on all of the time, this particular woman. And so she's been doing a lot of less on her telephone, you know, less on social media, getting out and walking, grounding, doing all of those things and taking supplements that sews back into her well-being. And recently I caught up with her and she said, I'm noticing a difference. Things even at work, I'm seeing them through a different set of eyes, if you will, because I'm calm. I can feel my body, you know, but she had to take action on that. And I think sometimes as women, even the thought of putting ourselves first can sometimes bring up guilt because we feel, you know, but as you said, and I want to stress this to all of you ladies, especially for those of you who have children. And I mean, my children are all older now, but as I look back, bringing up your babies, bringing up your children, when you look at what's going on in the world today, it is the most important thing because they hold the next generation, you know. And wouldn't you want to sow into these beautiful young children the way in which you would want to sow into their lives? But taking care of yourself first means that you can take care of others. What would you say then to someone, Jenna, who does feel a little bit of guilt if she does start to even think about putting herself first and giving herself some rest time? Because this is a difficult thing to do for some women.
Oh my goodness. No, I'm so glad you brought that up because it is so true. I went through it, right? I was a mom. I was a single mom raising a child, and I felt all kinds of guilt. I was a career-oriented woman. Once I got back in the working world, I stayed home with my son till he was around two and then got to work. And I'll tell you, I felt all kinds of guilt, but I had to grapple with that. Now, I wish I knew what I knew then, what I know now about guilt. So I'm going to give you two paths of thought on this. Number one, what I wish I had learned back then was that guilt doesn't mean you're necessarily doing something wrong. In fact, what guilt usually is an indication of is that you are breaking a normal pattern of behavior. So this is psychologists have enlightened me on this. I've read about this. I even quote Dr. Nadine Macaluso, who's a licensed family and marriage therapist or family therapist. And she also was the ex-wife to the Wolf of Wall Street, for anyone who's interested. That's a whole nother thing. We know she went through a lot of trauma in that relationship, but she ended up getting her degree, and now she's a therapist. And anyway, she helped shed a lot of light for me on that topic of guilt. And then I did some research and come to find out a lot of therapists have the same conclusion that it really doesn't mean you're doing anything wrong. So I think it's really helpful to know that when we start to prioritize ourselves and our needs, that we're going to feel guilty. It's perfectly normal. And that emotion isn't necessarily what you think it means. It usually means you're breaking a pattern of behavior. Number two, another thing I learned is that we form around 95% of our beliefs and behaviors by the age of seven. Mm-hmm. And where do we learn those beliefs and behaviors? Mostly from our parents, but also from our cultures, our religions, our immediate family members, teachers, peers, whoever's around us. And if all we're ever modeled as a child from our mothers and grandmothers and every other woman in our life is self-sacrifice and self-abandonment, guess what we're going to do when we have kids? That's all we know, right? And so we have to be the ones to figure out what that looks like and be that role model, not just for the friends that we have in our lives. Because again, from speaking with professionals in the field of therapy, psychotherapy, et cetera, most women, when they talk to them and talk about self-love being lacking in their life, they say, well, I ask them, well, who is a role model that you can look to in your lives? Most of the time, they don't have anybody. So that is part number two is, it is really our responsibility to change this script and be that role model for everyone in our lives, including our children, so that they see that it is normal for mommy and daddy to take care of themselves, have some them time, and to say, hey, I'm going to have a little me time. I need to recharge. I need to be my best. I'm going to give myself some self-love and let them see that that is normal and healthy.
Yeah, I remember a story, and I have shared this a couple of times on various episodes on the podcast, where a mother told her children, she got them in front of the apple bowl, which is the fruit bowl sitting in the middle of her table. And she said, as she was filling the bowl, as you can see, mummy's filling this fruit bowl, as you take a fruit bowl or piece of fruit out, you're often then left with nothing. And then we need to go to the shops to replenish, to restore this fruit bowl. And she said, so each apple is, imagine it's mummy and her energy, and transposing it in the way that in my words, so or not hers. And she basically said, so when mummy says to you that the fruit bowl is empty, it means mummy needs to go out and have a rest or read a book or need some quiet time. Yes. Because you've taken, each time you take a piece of fruit, like out of this fruit bowl, imagine that's mummy with her energy and spending time with you and reading and playing. But just like the fruit bowl needs to be replenished from the shops, I need replenishing, and that's time on my own. So every now and again, she would say, fruit bowl is empty, kids. I need to go and have a rest. And they knew that it was a time to let mummy rest.
I love that so much. Yeah, that's it. That's exactly it. It doesn't have to be super complex, but that was a really brilliant way to do it. Yeah, I love it.
Talk about resilience. When you talk about resilience, what do you mean about resilience, and how can we start to cultivate that if we're not already doing that intentionally already?
You know, it's funny about resilience. I feel like you develop resilience after going through challenges, right? That's typically how I've developed my resilience, is facing a challenge, but knowing that I can get through it. That, you know, and looking back to the past and saying, I have evidence that I've been able to survive the many, many harsh things and many challenges. I've had a very tough upbringing, rough childhood, a rough young adulthood. So I know I can get through the really tough things. So how bad are things really? You know, at the end of the day, I came to this epiphany that really all we really need as humans is a roof over our head, foods in our bellies, a place to fall asleep, some, you know, good friends and family that we love around us. And that's about it at the end of the day. You know, as much money or as you have or don't have, or as much privilege as you have or don't have, as long as you have those things, that's really key. And the rest of it is just we're you know, we can be grateful for what we have. And when you look at it from that lens, you know, you can, with the drama with the neighbor or the drama with a family member or the rough thing at work, and, you know, really, you know, how bad is it really? You know, I know we can let our emotions take over us and we can get wrapped up in that, or we can kind of, you know, be more mindful of the situation and become more resilient by just really changing the lens that we view it from, number one. Number two, really coming from the perspective of how can I respond versus react? And that's a place that I like to live from, and I talk about in my book as well, as being in a place where you can respond instead of react. Things can happen to you and you can react to them, which puts you in a defensive victim state, or you can look at it, take a pause, look at the situation and say, what's really happening here? How do I feel? Is this how I really want to feel? Is what, how I might react to this, how I want to be? Is this how I want to feel? Is this what I want in my life? And then you can look at things from a more mindful, in a more mindful way. So I'm very much about taking a pause, whether it's a minute, if you can, an hour, if necessary, or a day or a week, if needed. Just so you're not in this reactionary mode, which is very draining and exhausting, you know.
Yeah, it certainly is. And I love the way that you said that, you know, resilience is often developed if you've gone through a series of challenges. And, you know, so often we can look at a particular challenge and look at it in a positive way. And how, you might be asking, how on earth can you look at a challenge as a positive way? Well, when you look at the various things that you learned, what insights, and I love how you've said previously, you know, if what I know now, had I known that, you know, when I was younger, all of the lessons that you've learned. And I think sometimes if we don't look at these challenges that we've gone through and said, you know what, I've actually learned a lot. I'm a lot wiser. I'm a lot more mature now. I don't react. I'm able to respond, take a breath and look at it through the right lens rather than a cloudy lens. Because quite often we look at it through the cloudy lens of what society may, you know, the high expectations of society, which you realize, you know, they're actually not very important to me at all. And so when we don't recognize the lessons that we've learned, we can continue to make the same, you know, the cycles and make some of the same errors and not realize, you know what, I've been there, done that, I've got this. And I think we don't realize how strong we actually are. We often look at strength as muscles and muscular and physical strength. But I tell you, women, emotional strength and resilience and discernment, we can learn from all of these challenges that life.
There's two things I would love to add to that, Anne-Marie. Number one is I learned this from a guest on my show, a very young guest, who learned this very early on in life. She said, I have come to find that everything is either a lesson or a blessing.
Yeah.
It's a blessing or a lesson. So those challenges are lessons. And then it makes it not a negative thing, right? You know, okay, I'm dealing with a challenging situation. I'm going to be able to learn something from this. And then second, you know, the final chapter in my book, I talk about embracing your inner warrior goddess. Now, again, gentlemen, if you're listening, I apologize if this is very female oriented. But again, I wrote the book for women just because I wanted to deal with the gender specific issues that we face. But, you know, sometimes it is hard for us if we haven't had, you know, if we've been coddled or protected, or we haven't had to face a lot of challenges and develop our resilience, and or we're brand new on the path of self-love and we're just learning about it. It's challenging to think about setting boundaries and all the things we need to do to protect our energy and use our voice and trust our intuition and all the different nuances of self-love that I cover in my book. I call it embracing your inner warrior goddess. She is this part of you that exists inside of you, exists inside of every one of us, that is the epitome of your strongest self-love journey, basically. And then I lay out exactly what she stands for. You know, she says no when she feels like saying no. She says all these different things that, you know, once you know the things that she stands for, if you don't have the strength within you, you can look to this inner warrior goddess, so she's still part of you, and say, okay, what would my inner warrior goddess do? So I'm really excited about that, because that I got a lot of great feedback from readers from that chapter. And when we have a partner, her name is Amber, and we spun off this idea into a whole new book series that is actually in the process right now. We're all nearly finished with the first manuscript, and it's called Tiger Feather. I mentioned it in the book, but nothing had been done with, like, there was nothing public facing because we've been behind the scenes writing this whole book series. So we've got a series of 9 books coming out, that each of the 9 is one component of what this inner warrior goddess is. And the hope is to reach women when they're younger. It's a young adult fiction series to help kind of, you know, reinforce some of these things so that we can look to the stronger aspect of our higher selves to find the strength until we go through all those challenges and build our own resilience in this area. So sorry, that was a little long-winded, but thought I'd bring it up.
That's great. I mean, let's then talk, I mean, about, because I know one of the key points you want to talk about is establishing boundaries. Mm-hmm. I mean, boundaries is one of those things that is so very important. How would you describe what a boundary is? And then let's look at what are some key things that we can implement that will ensure that we stick to our boundaries and therefore prioritize self-care.
Yeah, thank you for asking. So boundaries, it's very interesting. We think, okay, what is a boundary? You're crossing maybe some imaginary space of mine where you've intruded, you've upset me in some way, or you perhaps talked about a topic that I didn't want talked about. You crossed a boundary by sharing something private about me publicly. Come to find out, boundaries, there's many different types of boundaries. There are physical boundaries around our physical space, right? So for example, I'm sure every one of your listeners has experienced a situation where somebody's touched them when they didn't want to be touched, or stood too close and you pack off because it just feels weird. They're in your energy, they're in your space, right? So there's a personal boundary, an invisible little boundary around your body that, you know, doesn't mean that everyone knows what that is, right? So I know somebody who's a close talker. They like to come super close in the little space. So unless you say very clearly, oof, that makes me uncomfortable, then how do they know they're crossing a boundary, right? So then there are boundaries with our gifts and our talents. Some people, family members, or perhaps people you work with, maybe you've worked somewhere for a long time, they think your gifts and talents are theirs to call on whenever they want, right? And you can put boundaries on those, like, well, hey, I charge for those gifts and talents, or however you want to put a boundary on those, right? And or your resources. That's another one. As a parent of adult child now, I've had to put boundaries on my personal resources. And that could be your home, your money, your everything, right? Like there are now boundaries here, or, you know, let's say you're dating somebody or married to somebody who doesn't bring in those resources, and, you know, you haven't combined resources. You know, your resources are not an unlimited resource for somebody else, right? Or maybe they are, but maybe they have been, and now you need to start putting boundaries on access to those resources. We can have boundaries around our own thoughts. I do that with myself, right? I can be mindful of a thinking pattern and say, oh, you know what, Jenna, you are crossing a boundary. You told yourself you weren't going to go there. So let's go ahead and shut that down, because I've made a decision that that is a boundary of mine. So there are many different types of boundaries. I think it's really great to be aware of them, so we can really start to look at, maybe a boundary of mine is being crossed in this situation. Like, you really got to start to get a little bit more clear on what boundaries are. And then for me, knowing when a boundary is being crossed, usually we feel it. We feel something, and it's usually for me in the form of discomfort. So if someone says something that's crossing a boundary, I feel it. Now, I might not at the moment be able to dissect what that is. It took me a lot of practice going home, removing myself from that situation, you know, after the situation's done, that when I'm home, reflecting on it, even journaling and saying, what happened? Why did I feel weird? Oh, okay, so this happened. That didn't feel good because they said this. Oh, well, I don't like that. I don't want someone talking to me like that, or I don't want someone talking about me like that. And then that's up to you to go and then decide, okay, I'm going to have a discussion with that person. And then you tell them the boundary. But that's a whole nother can of worms, Anne-Marie, because how you deliver a boundary is super important, right? Mm-hmm.
Kindness. It's so true. I mean, there is so much we could unpack an entire show on just boundaries, I think. But I think we can take some incredible golden nuggets from how you shared it and some examples. And first and foremost, I think we need to be aware of what are our boundaries. And if we haven't defined what they are, how on earth can we then communicate them? And I love the way in which something kind of triggered you, you know, or something made you feel a little bit, oh, hang on, something going on there. Rather than reacting, you took it away and you started to unpack what's going on here. And that's one of the things that I'll often do too. I'll listen to something, oh, something quite negative. Is this something that I need to deal with? Because quite often, we don't have time to dive in it today, but something for people to think about, ponder about, is if we haven't healed from a certain situation, things that may be happening around us can trigger us more so because we haven't healed through that. And that could be an indication you need to spend some time and get some real healing and deal with that. It may mean that if this ever happens again, it's going to kind of have you go like that, but you're not going to unravel, if you will. So what you just said, because I want to leave a little bit of time to talk about the tips and strategies for leaders. One of the things that you said is you recognize what they were so that you could then define them and then be able to communicate them. But something else that you did, and I want to just highlight this, was so good. When you're talking about, you've got a self boundary around what you allow yourself, the inner talk, inner critic, whatever you want to call it. And when you see this inner critic or hear that you have this conversation going on in your head, you go, hang on a minute. I put a boundary up against that. I'm not going to go down that. So it actually requires us to partake in the act and say, no, I'm not going to do that. That would become easier for you, hasn't it? Sharing that. You're putting up a boundary first. Don't give up. Keep going, because it'll get easier and easier as you go, because you've got that inner strength building. Go, nope, that's a boundary. I'm going to have a talk to myself in this instance, but talk to someone about that.
It gets easier and easier. I love that you mentioned looking at whether or not how you're feeling is a trigger versus a boundary being crossed, because there's a very good chance it's a trigger. And, you know, a lot of times people will say, well, that's, you triggered me, so that's my boundary. Oof, I see that a lot.
Yeah.
And it's strange. I'm hearing, okay, that's a boundary of mine. You can't cross that. But it's just not quite the same thing. You being triggered and me having to walk on eggshells around your triggers is not quite the same as a healthy boundary.
That's right. I'm glad we had that conversation, because we're seeing a lot of people getting triggered, and it's unhealthy boundaries that we're establishing for them. And I hope that they would have the courage to, you know, deal and address those things, because I tell you, there's strength on the other side. There's a level of inner strength on the other side of that, that, you know, when you do deal with that, whatever situation that you are being.
Yeah. And that's where I think that healthy, kind, compassionate, empathetic conversation is everything. Because if you come at it from have the conversation from a response where you've thought about it, you've got your talking points down, and you have a healthy conversation, and you're kind and compassionate in your delivery, but you're open to a conversation, you might learn something that might give you a different perspective. Because chances are, of course, they're not, most of the time, 99.9% of the time, no one's trying to trigger you, and no one's trying to cross a boundary. Yeah. So we have to give them kindness in the delivery, unless it's, you know, some dude at a bar who touches your leg and you don't like it. There's no need to be nice, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, there is something, and I want to share it because I think this is really relates to what we're talking about today around triggers and boundaries and when we're having conversations with someone else. There was an exercise that a team started to implement. And when any time a team was brought together for a specific project, they would openly share whatever they wanted to share, a little bit about them, their backgrounds, even if they wanted to talk about some of their childhood. And what they had felt was very impactful to them becoming the person that they are today. And as the conversations went around the table, becoming aware of some of the situations that someone had been through and how it had impacted their actions, reactions, their communication styles, opened up such an empathy and understanding. And one particular person who many of the team members thought was a bit of a grump, when he shared the story around how he was a youngster and grew up very much in war-torn countries, and his father was killed. And so he had to, at a young age, take on kind of a leadership role, or the male role, or he felt it upon himself. And so that's why any time that anything happened in the team, he wanted to address it really quickly, because he didn't want them to have to go through certain things. He wanted to mitigate that before. But to them, it was kind of closed-minded, very direct. But he was doing it from a protective kind of a stance. And when they realized that, they went, oh, he's not just being a, you know, so-and-so. And they were able to have conversations. Hang on a minute, whatever his name is, Peter, I know that you've got, you know, protection on your mind, but let's have a conversation so that we can come to a collaborative way that we could attack that. And it just really changed the complete dynamics of the whole team.
Definitely. That's the thing. So if we open a conversation in a compassionate way, and you'd be surprised what you learn. And not just about them, but also about yourself, especially in a conversation where you were triggered or you felt the boundary was crossed. You might be surprised at what you learn, and you might come to another conclusion.
Yeah. Go with a curious mindset. What can you both learn? And maybe you might learn that, no, I was definitely correct.
Yeah.
But, you know, you might get a bit of an appreciation of someone in their viewpoint and go, well, next time that happens, I've got a little bit of a strategy on how to deal with that. Let's dive in before we finish on tips and strategies for leaders to balance both the masculine and feminine qualities into their leadership style.
I love this. Yeah, I love this topic so much. It's, you know, I personally, I tend to be, I would say just as evenly balanced in my masculine as I am in my feminine now, but I had to work hard, believe it or not, to get more into my feminine. Because, you know, to succeed in business, especially in the US where I'm from, I understand you're not here, but over here, we are very ambitious, all about achieving and succeeding. And to play that game, you've got to be in your masculine to compete and to get ahead and to rise through leadership roles. So for me as a woman, believe it or not, I had to work towards balancing out my feminine. Now that's really helped me a lot in business. And I feel like this is where things are going. So you might be surprised to learn, when I talk about balancing the masculine and the feminine, it's not how you would think. So for a lot of ambitious women, I feel like we could use going more into our feminine and embracing that. It's a little scary in a patriarchy and in an environment where you might be in a technology company or in banking or some other male-dominated industry. It's a little scary to think about doing that. But, you know, it's not just for women. It's also for men. So men and women actually need to right now start embracing more feminine principles. So what does that look like? The feminine is more creative. It is more intuitive. It is more inclusive, collaborative. It's the psychological safety. It's giving everyone a chance to have their voices heard. It's the power with versus the power over, which is the title of this podcast interview we're having today, which I love so much. It's more about using your power to create power with, right? Mm-hmm. Because you might be in this position of power as a leader, but it's not about having power over them. This is the old paradigm. It's the old way of approaching leadership, of hierarchical, I'm your boss, so you do it because I tell you to do it, versus let's get everyone's voices heard. Let's feel like everyone plays a part of this. It's a collaboration, and more empathy, better listening, more compassion. Those are us going more into our feminine. Now, I'm sure we all know what the masculine looks like, but maybe didn't have the words around it. But the masculine's more about achieving, being goal-oriented, very much the action. The opposite of that would be being, which is the feminine. The feminine is more being and presence versus the masculine being more action-oriented. Structure, that's again the masculine. So business, American business especially, has been very much about the masculine. But today, you'd be surprised. I do a lot of speaking, event facilitation, and moderating, mostly with leaders. And these are masculine and feminine spaces. Sometimes it's mostly masculine. And the C-suite leaders, especially at large companies, I am hearing that they are having a lot of success bringing in, they're not calling it feminine, they're calling it more soft skills, but bringing in more of the feminine into their leadership approach. And this is big right now. So for us to really be effective leaders today, especially in the era of AI, we need to step more into our full power, our full humanity, so that we stand out as the humans that we are. And that means embracing more of our feminine power. So what I call it is being powerful, F-U-L-L, full, which is we have our masculine power and our feminine power. Let's bring our full selves, our whole selves as leaders to the table so that we can benefit not just the company and not just our careers, but all the people that we lead. They're under our watch, right?
I love that. And I mean, as you're sharing that, you can, I'm sure other people as they're listening to you are saying you can see how a blend of those are so important, not just for the individual, but for the communities that we're building with inside our companies. And then also it impacts others around us. And I think that is where you see some of the corporations today, you know, that whole winning and despite everybody else, we want to be on top. We want to annihilate the competition. I mean, that just sounds disgusting, doesn't it? It sounds awful. And I remember I come back from a career coaching background, and I remember coaching my clients on their interview skills, but their salary negotiation. And I said to them, look, you can negotiate a salary that is so high that you will negotiate yourself out of a job because the company will just not be able to afford you. But if you come in with something that is win-win, both for you, both for the company, and even long-term, because you know that, you know, as the company continues to increase through your expertise and your gifts and talents that you're sowing within that company, they're going to be able to win, and their customers can win, the community can win. And I think that that's really so important, isn't it? That we can use our gifts and talents and corporate, but let's be mindful about how it's impacting others around. There is so much business and opportunity in this world, isn't there, for everybody to succeed, everyone to have the freedom to reach their full, what I call God-given potential, wherever they are. And let's create a society and a community that allows, you know, for them to do so. So
yeah, I have also I was just going to say, and then also you just add so much more to the company. You help them build you weave the fabric of the culture together for them, and you bring so much more value when it's about power with versus power over. And so it really just helps you stand out as a leader as well. So it's just a different mindset when it comes to leadership. And yeah, I'm so glad that you brought this up today.
Yeah, it's so important. And I think also too that when we look at feedback and surveys from consumers, they are far more discerning in who they spend their dollar with. Are these companies ones that are exactly the qualities and the values, the core values of the company of what we're talking about today, or are they only in it for themselves, you know?
Yeah.
And people will purchase or will make their decision with their dollars. And so let's be a company that people love to do business with because they know it's going to impact at a far larger scale. How can people find out more about you, Jenna, and get in contact with you?
Thanks for asking. Yeah, my website's actually the best place because I have links to my social media there, my video series, The Jenna Banks Show. So that is Jenna-Banks.com. Again, Jenna-Banks.com. Actually, you can remove the dash. Now it's JennaBanks.com. I got that domain. And then also I have a free email series on there called Love Notes to Myself that I would highly recommend if self-love as a topic is something you're interested in diving more into, or women's leadership. Definitely sign up for that because I weave the two together in a weekly email series that's absolutely free. I don't know if my book, I Love Me More, is available in Australia, honestly. So there might be a way to get it over there. But this is the next best thing is just to sign up for the Love Notes to Myself email series.
Awesome. Well, thanks once again for coming on the show. Loved our conversation. And please get in contact with Jenna. I'm pretty sure most books are available within Australia as well, particularly is your book available from Amazon?
It is. And I just don't know if they sell it over there or not. I haven't done that investigation, but I hope so. I do hope so.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it will. But anyway, as Jenna said, she's got her own podcast show and all of the details and links and so forth are on her website. So thanks once again for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's Anne-Marie. Before I go, are you a coach or a consultant who feels like the world's best kept secret? Your experience is vast, yet secretly you're frustrated because despite all of your hard work, you're just not getting the visibility, the recognition, or new clients you'd hope for, and you don't know why? I've created a free resource that'll help you build visibility, generate leads, and enroll dream clients with ease because you're seen as a trusted authority, even in a crowded marketplace. And you've positioned yourself as the choice versus just a choice for your dream client. To get started, go to annemariecross.com/gift. That's annemariecross.com/gift.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.